All right. Good evening, everyone. Let's begin. So, I'd like to, as we get started for the shiur, I'd like to kind of begin a little bit differently, than we normally begin. Obviously, we use this slot to go ahead and learn about the parsha, and hopefully extrapolate some of the meaningful life and contemporary lessons from the parsha. But I think, given the events of this past week, it behooves us just to take a step back and to reflect just a little bit. So first, we dedicate our learning this evening, Le'ilui Nishmas, the victims of the terrible massacre in Pittsburgh, Rose Malinger, Melvin Wax, Bernice and Sylvan Simon, Joyce Feinberg, Daniel Stein, Irving Younger, Dr. Jerry Rabinowitz, Dr. Richard Gottfried, Cecil Rosenthal, and David Rosenthal. And then, you know, we heard the terrible news that came out of Eretz Yisrael yesterday with the horrific car crash, the vehicular accident on the road by En Gedi that took the lives of an entire mishpacha, the Attar family, parents Yariv and Shoshi, and their six children, Yaakov, Yisrael, Ataret, Ayala, Moria, Yedid, and Avigail. Exceptionally overwhelming and difficult week for Klal Yisrael. So we hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, the neshamas of the victims of Pittsburgh, the neshamas of the Attar family should have an aliyah, and halavai Klal Yisrael should have a nechama. So I want to just spend a few moments. I feel a little bit awkward doing this because I don't consider myself to be someone who needs to comment. You know, some people need to have an opinion and need to have a commentary on everything. And some people, again, are blessed with incredible insight and incredible wisdom and are able to make sense of every life circumstance. I do not count myself amongst those people, nor do I usually feel compelled to give insight or commentary into world or life events. The truth is, we live in the age where, unfortunately, there's not yet prophecy. We'll have to wait for Mashiach to come in order for there to be prophecy again. And so many of the events which unfold around us often seem to defy comprehension. But given the fact that less than a four-hour drive from here, perhaps the worst event, the worst episode of anti-Semitism in the history of our time here in North America, so it behooves us to spend just a few moments focusing on some of the lessons of this particular tragedy, and in Eretz Hashem, trying to tie it into the parsha afterwards. So I want to begin just by making a few simple points. And in no way are they authoritative. In no way are they meant to go ahead and be the be-all, end-all explanations. These are my own thoughts, as I, like many of you, have been struggling since Matzei Shabbos. You know, we, in the shul here, we were celebrating such a beautiful simcha. We had a double simcha. One mishpacha made a bar and bat mitzvah on the same Shabbos. And after Shabbos, to find out that at the same time that we're celebrating, such a horrific tragedy unfolds just a mere few hours away, requires us to at least introspect a little bit and try to understand. So you'll bear with me, this is not a political commentary, but just a few basic points. Number one, it's so incredibly important that we not make this terrible tragedy into an agenda item. The massacre in Pittsburgh is not a gun control topic. It's not a President Trump topic. It is one topic and one topic only: anti-Semitism. You know, we are privileged to live in a beautiful community. And even though, unfortunately, crime is something that we contend with, we don't contend, per se, with anti-Semitic crime. And we live in this country, we live in this gullus, we live in this exile, and it's been wonderful to us. This is a golden age of Jewry. We have unprecedented opportunities. We have unprecedented communal wealth. We have unprecedented influence. And sometimes we like to think that anti-Semitism is a historical bygone. It was. It was what happened in Poland, what happened in Eastern Europe, what happened in Russia, and maybe in Eretz Yisrael they have to deal with it a lot because of terrorism. But by and large, we assume that here we're free of such ancient hatred. But the reality is, we're not. We're not. Anti-Semitism, again, as we know, is on the uptick. And anti-Semitism, again, is very relevant and very much here. And all you have to do is travel just a few minutes outside of our Baltimore bubble to get a look or to get a comment or to get a statement. And all you have to do is interact with people who sometimes so innocuously and innocently make comments that are objectively anti-Semitic and objectively anti-Jewish. And it's important for us to recognize that we live in the diaspora. This is not a speech about Aliyah. And this is not, you know, someone came over to me and they said, "Oh, Rabbi, you know what the message is over here?" And I said, "No, please tell me, Navi. Tell me, what is the message here?" So the message here is that we have to go and move to Eretz Yisrael. I said to him, "I don't believe in a God that teaches me that I have to go ahead and make Aliyah by butchering 11 innocent people. I don't believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu operates that way. Do we need to make Aliyah? Of course. We all have to think about it. And if we're not going to, at least we have to feel guilty about it. We're Jewish. You have to feel guilty about something. At the end of the day, we don't belong here. This isn't our natural home. This isn't our ancestral homeland. We are visitors in this land. This country is wonderful to us. This country is gracious to us. But we are visitors. And if history repeats itself, there will come a point in time when, unfortunately, we'll be made to feel more and more like visitors." Anti-Semitism is real. And it's important that we understand that. It's important that we accept that. And it's important that we brace our children for that. This is a country which allows us to practice our Judaism freely, but it is not a Jewish country. It is a Gentile country that has been wonderful to us. But we must always be vigilant on a variety of levels. Unfortunately now, on a physical security level, but in addition to that, on a spiritual level as well. It's a country that sometimes is supportive and at the other times is so incredibly hostile to the values we have, to the beliefs we have. To make this about anything else other than rabid anti-Semitism is doing a disservice to the memories of those who were butchered. A second lesson. We must be mindful of the speech we use. We now live in a time where you cannot go ahead and turn on the news without hearing someone of prominence debasing, humiliating, or embarrassing someone else. And no, this is not code for the president, because everyone does this. Politics is disgusting. There is a fundamental lack of leadership on our national level. The age of morality in leadership, the age of taking the high ground in leadership, I'm not an old man, but seems to be something of a bygone era. Using social media to hurt people, using social media to debase people, is something that is common each and every day, each and every moment. We as a people have been the target of hateful speech. And you know, we have to make sure that we are respectful about the way we speak about other minorities. We, as a Jewish people, are not permitted to make jokes at the expense of other minorities. We, as Jewish people, cannot use derogatory terms for other minorities, even if they're Yiddish words. Just because a word is Yiddish does not mean that it has a place in a Jewish lexicon. The barbaric murderer who burst into a shul last Shabbos morning was fueled and fueled others with hatred, verbal hatred. You know, we say, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never harm me. We know that's unequivocally false. Words hurt so much. Words create realities. And words sometimes spur people to do the most horrific acts. We can't control how the president talks. We can't control how the vice president talks, how the Democrats, how the Republicans. That's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's problem, because I don't know how else could solve that issue. But we could control how we talk. We can control the verbiage we use. We control how we speak about other ethnicities and how we speak about other races. We are an Or LaGoyim. We are a light unto the nations. And we must conduct ourselves accordingly. There is no such thing as a racial joke that has a place in a Jewish home, at a Jewish table, amongst friends. There is no derogatory term for any human being that is even, you know, even when we speak about people like Hitler, like Haman, all right, we say Yimach Shemo v'zichro, his name should be obliterated, but we don't go ahead and use derogatory terms. We don't go ahead and disparage. We go ahead and we discuss. We highlight the idea that we want the names of the wicked to be obliterated. But the Jewish mouth can never be used to disparage another human being. And a third lesson. We must strive to be one people. And I'm very uncomfortable talking about this, but I feel like it requires, it has to be spoken about. Over the last couple of days, especially in some of the more right-of-center religious news outlets, there have been some pretty reprehensible things that have been said. Time being spent on, well, can you call the place where 11 Jews were murdered a shul? Could it be called a shul? Is it not called a shul? It was reform, it was this. And the truth is, the chief rabbi, Rabbi David Lau, whose words were terribly misquoted in the media, said it correctly. He said, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. That's not the discussion. Whether 11 Jews are murdered in a shul, a supermarket, a library, or in a house, Jews were murdered because they were murdered. We are witnessing the worst anti-Semitic event in North America. And we're fighting amongst ourselves as to whether or not a reform shul is called the shul, is called the synagogue, is called the JCC, is called the house of worship. We have to learn to put these differences aside. You know, I'm sure many of you saw the article. It was a very difficult article to read in a publication for the LGBTQ community called The Advocate. And in it, it discussed that at the time of the attack in the shul in Pittsburgh, there was a bris, a double bris, happening for a same-sex couple. A gay couple was having a bris for their child. And the vitriol that has come out of the mouth of some, saying that, of course, they got what they deserved. An abomination. How could it be? You know, my friends, I want to tell you something very important. None of us has the right to stand in judgment of another human being. We all have our challenges. We all have our strengths. We all have our weaknesses. We all have our pluses. We all have our minuses. Each of us has more than enough to do focusing on ourselves. How dare we ever stand in judgment of another human being, let alone another Jew? And how dare we ever be so arrogant to think that we understand the ways of God? People are good even if they make decisions that we don't agree with. People are good even if they live lifestyles that we don't agree with. People could be holy in their own way, even if they don't practice the way that we practice. At a time where Jewish blood is being spilt, at a time where anti-Semitic events are on the uptick in this great country, this is not the time to draw lines. This is not the time to decide who's in the club and who's out of the club. Who's really Jewish, who's not so Jewish. Who's living the right way, who's not living the right way. All I can tell you is, it's Wednesday. And since Monday, we've been watching Jewish funerals. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, the last funeral scheduled for Friday. And if there was a bris happening at the time of this terrible attack, you know what we say when we enter a little boy into the covenant of the bris milah? We say to him, Va'amar lach bidamayich chayi. We say to him that through your blood, we will live. Through the blood of Klal Yisrael, the blood of Klal Yisrael is the very lifeblood through which gives us life today. And if there were 11 Jews who were butchered in the midst of a bris milah, again, whatever the details are irrelevant. We owe it to their neshamas to also say, bidamayich chayi. For the Jew, every single event that occurs has to be a catalyst for growth. Every single event that occurs has to be a wake-up call. A wake-up call to do better, to live better, to be better, to find our inner holiness when we see such darkness visited upon our world. So our job is to infuse more light, not to make the lines of divisiveness deeper and more pronounced. These are the lessons I think we have to take to heart. Understand that anti-Semitism, unfortunately, is alive and well. And we have to educate ourselves, we have to educate our children, and we have to really think about where we live, what we're doing, where the Jewish future ultimately resides. We must be mindful of the speech we use. Never to use hate-filled speech, even if used in jest or if used as a joke. And we must strive to be one people. Not one people with those who sit next to you in shul. I mean, that's a good start. But not one people with just your neighbors. Not one people with people who look like you, dress like you, observe like you. But one people. But one people. In the aftermath of Jewish tragedy, there's only one question we ask. And it's not, was it a shul or a synagogue or a Jewish center? It's not, what were they doing, what type of lifestyle they were living? It's one simple question. What can we do to help? What can we do to heal the broken hearts? What could we do to repair Klal Yisrael? What can we do to just bring in a little bit more light into a world that at times feels so profoundly dark? And let us hope that Emir Tzashem, the merit of internalizing these lessons, that we will give an aliyah to the neshamas of all the victims of the Pittsburgh massacre, as well as to the beautiful neshamas of the Attar family in Halavai, in the zechus of growing from these incredible tragedies. May HaKadosh Baruch Hu bring an end to all of our tragedies, and may He usher in an ongoing and eternal period of nechama for Klal Yisrael. With that, I'd like to kind of segue a little bit into Parshas Chayisara. So if you take a look at number one on your sheet, so the opening part of the Parsha, Vayu Chayei Sara, Mea Shana Ve'esrim Shana V'Sheva Shanim, Shnei Chayei Sara. So the Pasuk begins in a very simple way, and we're familiar with these Pesukim. These are the years of Sara Yemenu's life, 100 years, 20 years, 7 years. These are the years of Sara's life. So there's a number of questions about this Pasuk, but I really want to focus tonight on a simple question raised by the Lubavitch Rebbe, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. And the Rebbe writes in number 2 in his Likutei Sichos, Yadua, Shashem HaParsha, Mevate Es Tochan HaParsha Kula. So the Rebbe says something amazing. You know, we all know that the names of the Parshios are supposed to capture the essence of the Parsha. So we have been